Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Sweden, and this is Red Ice Radio. If you missed our live show this week for members, you can always watch it in the archives at redicemembers.com. Many fun subjects this week, and also a more serious and deeper analysis of what happened in Dallas and how the media, politicians, establishment, and many in the alternative truth movement are seeking to push their narrative upon us. They very much align on the same points, interestingly enough, and we expose and we demonstrate how they're seeking to push their own narrative and use this event for their own purposes. Very interesting, so definitely don't miss that. Now, if you haven't already, please sign up for a membership with us at redicemembers.com and see our live TV show, Weekend Warrior, every Saturday. Our public website is redice.tv, and that's where you can hear our radio show, also Radio 314 with Lana, and watch many of our videos. Well, today we have Matt Forney back with us. It's been a lot of Matt here the last week. We had him with us for the video that we did on the Alton Sterling and Philando Castile shootings. And basically, as you might know, as soon as we were done, the Dallas shooting happened. But our analysis, I would say, was very much correct because we saw the immediate backlash, the anti-police narrative in the media, and the consequent violence against police. You can see that video at redice.tv and redicemembers.com. Now, today's show with Matt was recorded just one day before the two shootings occur, so we didn't get a chance to tie that into our discussion. That's why we made the additional video with him. But we're going to talk about the Summer of Rage, Black Lives Matter, and the upcoming Republican and Democratic National Conventions that we are going to live stream here in just about a week or so. You'll be able to see this live stream at redice.tv or through our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/redice radio. Definitely subscribe to our YouTube channel to get the latest updates from there. We're going to talk about the details, the dates, and of course also reach out to you for participation in these two national conventions as well. So stay tuned, much more coming up. Hey Matt, welcome back. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. It's good to talk with you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Henrik.
You bet. So we'll be covering the Republican National Convention and then later, about a week later, the Democratic National Convention later this month. You've extended, of course, some help, and we're also looking for some people who can assist with camera work, both in Cleveland and Philadelphia. I definitely want to, you know, kind of talk more about that later. But let me back out a bit and just talk about the generalities of why you wanted to cover this election in the way you do, because it used to be a situation where basically the globalists controlled all the puppets that were running for the presidency. And, you know, we used to be more, you know, I think that we kind of really didn't care that much about these elections. It didn't really matter. You know, whoever you vote for, the globalist won. It would be more wars, more debt, more immigration, more of the same, basically. But this time, there was Trump. You know, we have a man that the establishment utterly hates. The media hates him like nothing else. I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, even though he's tried kind of to inch his way towards, you know, some of these kind of more established, you know, politicians to kind of make peace within the party to try to become president, which I guess is kind of understandable under these circumstances. But despite that, I think it's hope for people like us, for people who are concerned about where countries in the West are going. And if nothing else, you know, if Trump becomes president, we might even find out just how little the president actually controls things. So I think he would be kind of vocal about those things. He's talking about a crooked system. He's talking about how these, how FBI's determination of Hillary's, the email scandal with Hillary, how that was like, that the system is crooked and corrupt and all those kinds of things. So there's a lot of things at stake at this election, but tell us your plans for the coverage, Matt, and why you wanted to do this, why this is important to you.
Well, yes, well, for the past 6 months, I've been covering the election. I began with heading to Iowa back in January to cover the Iowa caucuses, the first race in the primary election. And my motivation for doing it was I sort of dabbled in journalism a few months back when I was covering the Black Lives Matter protests in Chicago over the shooting death of Laquan McDonald. But basically, my philosophy is that we can't, for the longest time, the alt-right, the alternative media, whatever you want to call it, has relied on mainstream media coverage to formulate its opinions of the world. You know, we're getting our news from CNN, Rolling Stone, the people who actually have the resources to take this stuff. And my mentality is simply this: we can't do that anymore because they lie about everything. We've seen so many media hoaxes deflated in the past year. You know, the Clock Boy hoax, the various Black Lives Matter protest shootings. That if possible, we need to get people on the ground to actually see these things as they're happening, record them, and document them, and get the word out. A lot of people can't do that because, they have jobs to worry about. You know, they've got families to worry about. They can't risk popping their anonymity. I'm someone in a position where I can do this. I'm a writer, full-time writer for a living. I write under my real name. I have nothing to lose, basically. And I have a proven record of experience in this. So, several months back, I went to and covered the Iowa caucuses for Right On just over a week. And I also did extensive coverage of other major primaries in the race, including I was at the anti-Trump riot that happened in Chicago, which was the first of many anti-Trump riots, unfortunately. I covered the Wisconsin primary, the New York primary, and the Indiana primary, which turned out to be the pivotal primary in which Trump secured the nomination. What I'm planning to do for the conventions is basically an extension of what I've already done. I go to the convention, I record video, I document what I'm doing, I'll be writing a series of daily articles for Right On, and in addition, I will also be providing live video coverage for Red Ice, which is step up from what I've been doing. We're not going to rely on Periscope, or you won't have to wait for me to upload video when I can get access to a computer, which is almost never. You'll be able to see this unfold as it's happening and be able to understand what's going on as it's happening without the distortion of the mainstream media. And I've been raising funds to help do this because journalism, independent journalism, is an expensive endeavor, and we're hoping we can bring the real news to you, and help enhance your understanding of the world and understand your understanding of the election.
Yeah, absolutely, well put. We absolutely have to do it ourselves, as we see time and time again. We can't rely on the reporting, we can't rely on the analysis, we can't rely much less on the way that they skew things and turn things in a different direction to use it for their own political gains, obviously. But what do you think is something, what's the setup like for these conventions now? Because a lot of things are in place for this to become something really nasty. Let's be honest about this. There's been tremendous violence outside of many of these Trump rallies, and it's been quiet for a while now because he's obviously won the nomination. Well, it's going to be settled here at this convention, obviously, more or less. It's a pretty heated situation, right?
Yes, the big thing here is that about a couple weeks ago, several Russian hackers hacked into the Twitter account of DeRay McKesson, who is basically the de facto leader of Black Lives Matter, major left-wing protest organizer, and revealed McKesson's plans for what he called the Summer of Chaos. Their plan is to Black Lives Matter and all these leftist activist groups, they are going to bust in thousands of protesters and rioters to the Republican and Democratic National Conventions to basically shut them down and shut the cities down. And their goal with this is twofold. Number one, they want to try and intimidate the Republicans in taking the nomination away from Trump. And number two, they're trying to cause enough chaos that Obama will declare a martial law and basically suspend the elections. Now, I don't know how much of this is true or how much of this is conspiracy theorizing, but we've seen what the left has been doing with these riots at Trump rallies. We saw what happened what happened in Chicago the last time I was on Red Eye. So, you can refer to that episode if you want to hear more about that. But we also what happened in San Jose, where protesters that were funded in part by the Mexican government started throwing eggs at Trump supporters, attacking them, physically attacking them, cornering them. And the police did nothing. The police were ordered by the mayor to stand by and basically watch as these rioters attacked people who went to the Trump rally. And this is both because the mayor is a Democrat and deep in deep in the globalist construct, and also because there's been something an effect on police called the Ferguson effect, referring to what happened 2 years ago when the shooting of Michael Brown. Basically, cops across this country are increasingly afraid to do their jobs because they're afraid that their film, say, arresting a minority, a film arresting a black person, there's going to be protests, they'll lose their job, they'll be pilloried as a racist. And as a result, This is actually just recently reported in the New York Post. There's actually been an increase in violent crime for the first time in years because police can't do their jobs. They're afraid. They've been intimidated by Black Lives Matter protests over Laquan McDonald, Michael Brown, or recently Alton Sterling. This happened recently in yes. Baton Rouge. Alton Sterling, a convicted child molester who owes something like $25,000 in back child support, was shot by police. And Black Lives Matter are organizing around it. Proof of institutional racism. We're going to shut the city down, blah, blah, blah. So if the leftists are going to be busing in thousands of protesters to these conventions, and we need to, actually film this, document this, and resist the attempt by violent leftists overthrow our democracy and take over our country. It sounds ridiculous, but this may be one of the defining moments for our generation, the younger generation.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, you're absolutely right. There's so many things at stake, and it's very strange, to be honest. I mean, in terms of European politics, these things have been more or less, happening throughout history back and forth. I mean, okay, the past history of America is a quite violent one at times too, obviously, but we haven't really seen anything like this for many, many decades, I would say. Correct me if I'm wrong. It was like, what, back in 60s something, when there was something similar at the Democratic National Convention, right?
Yes, the last time we saw violent upheavals was in the 60s and late 70s. And that's a good comparison, Henrik. The most violent convention on record in the history of America, in the modern history of American politics, was the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. Now, 10,000 protesters were bussed into the city by the Coalition to Stop the War in Vietnam and all these other groups, and we saw massive amounts of police violence, brutality, etc. They're trying to replicate that just for the purposes of sowing chaos and provoking the. Oh, I should also mention that Black Lives Matter may actually be cooperating with Attorney General Loretta Lynch. We have to document this and do our best to resist it, because the police are not going to stand up for us. The police have been cowed in submission, or in the case of places like Chicago and San Jose, they are being told to stand down. The left is pushing aggressively. Trump is the first legitimate threat they see to their power in God knows how long, and they're not going to give up without a fight.
No, exactly. This shooting, let me go back to that for a moment, of that happened in Baton Rouge. A very strange shooting. I've never seen anything like that with the video. As usual, we're not seeing what happens before. We don't see if there's any arguments or altercations. They just kind of cut straight to it. And in the other cases, same thing came out later, that it was like, oh, okay, they were resisting arrest. It was problems. They were being violent or something happened. In this case, it just looks like the cops attack him out of nowhere. It was just an innocent guy standing out selling CDs and DVDs outside some store somewhere. But when they fall over, you see the camera like shakes right before actually the shots are fired, before you can hear the shot in the video. So initially you might think that, oh, okay, the camera person was kind of jarred when they heard the shots, but it's actually a movement before that, and it becomes very difficult to see who of these two officers actually, allegedly fired their guns, right? It's kind of strange. I've never seen police actually trip someone like that and then being so close to them, holding a gun and allegedly shooting them. I mean, can we even be certain that what the media is telling us is actually what happened here?
Yeah, I mean, that you pointed out that is very suspicious. It doesn't sound like anything that police would do in any training, because it's a very when you're handling a gun in close quarters, it's very dangerous. Like, for example, it's often told the police and other people who are trained in combat, if you draw a gun on someone who's coming at you with a knife and they're within 20 feet, they're going to get to you and start attacking you before you can get a shot off. And you mentioned that we don't see exactly what happens before this. This is a The left, the media, have been doing this for well over 20 years. If you recall back to the Rodney King incident in Los Angeles in 1992, the video of Rodney King getting beaten by multiple police officers was what was broadcast on media all around the world. But what we didn't see was, though, the lengthy police chase that King put the police through, where he was trying to avoid arrest, where he was mouthing off to cops, where he was genuinely, I mean, there is an argument to be made for excessive police force. force. But this is not, you know, Black Lives Matter. The left is not doing this out of concern for, you know, reigning in the power police. They're doing this because they want to cause racial anarchy. They want to cause geld the ability of police departments and of the government to enforce, tamp down criminality and have a free reign. They've done it in Ferguson. They've done it in Baltimore. They've been trying to, commit a little municipal coup here in Chicago, and they actually sort of achieved a goal when they, got Rahm Emanuel to fire the police chief. If they're allowed to keep doing this, eventually we're going to be living in, an extreme version of Sam Francis's anarcho tyranny, where the law abiding citizens have to face all kinds of restrictions, but the criminals will be able to do whatever they want. I mean, a particularly ridiculous example is here in Chicago, there's a rapper named Rondo Number 9. And not too long ago, he was actually posting pictures of himself on Instagram with a rocket launcher, which is illegal everywhere. You know,
that's funny.
That's the world we live in now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there was some debate whether or not George Soros poured in, $33 million into Black Lives Matter. We know, though, that many of these globalists have helped to fund many of these groups, particularly Black Lives Matter. I mean, I think. Really, what this is about is kind of order out of chaos, right? That out of this chaos that they are artificially, to a certain extent, helping to manufacture, they're going to reshape things in their own image. It's an old, edict of basically dialectic politics, And I think that they're seeking to use these situations to either as an excuse to clamp down on people's, gun rights, or they want to have more, harder police kind of presence and surveillance states and all these things. There's so many things for them to gain from kind of exacerbating the situation like this.
Oh, yes. And this has been, it's been proven to a certain extent that Soros is involved. For example, when during the Arizona primary, there was a massive protest, an attempt to, Mexican illegal alien activists tried to shut down the road to keep people who were from entering or leaving the Trump rally. And there was a famous picture of this one Mexican protester who defiantly chained herself to a car with a chain around her neck. Turns out she's an employee of Soros's Open Society Foundation.
Yeah.
And also worth mentioning that in the U.S. specifically, the Mexican government has had a huge hand in fomenting these riots. Mexico has a massive financial interest in continuing to send illegal aliens to the U.S. because remittances, money sent by Mexican illegals back to their families in Mexico, actually forms the largest portion of Mexico's economy. It's a
You're
very
kidding.
Poor country.
Really?
Yes. It's even larger than their oil exports. And it's such a big business that Carlos Slim, who is the largest owner of telecommunications networks in Mexico, he owns the cell phone services. So every time Mexicans make a call back, he makes money off of that. When they send money back, he gets a little fee for the wire. For several years running, he was actually the wealthiest man in the world.
That's right. Yep.
He's still in the top five, and he has been actively manipulating media in the U.S. to push a pro-legal alien line. Several years ago, when the New York Times was on the verge of bankruptcy, he came in and gave them a cash bailout, more or less on the condition that they would aggressively push for amnesty of illegal Mexican aliens. And Mexico, despite being a poor country, is actually, in terms of raw money, one of the largest foreign lobbyists in Washington, roughly about the same size as the Israeli lobby. They have a massive interest in maintaining the status quo, and they've been fomenting riots and openly interfering in an American presidential election because they see Trump as a major threat to their little scam.
Yeah, yeah. The situation you describe here with the police basically being unable to operate in the way that they've been used to is a very dangerous one, obviously, for regular people, basically, who can basically might want to attend in a political event or whatever, might be targeted, they might be violently attacked, some of them might even be murdered, to be honest. I mean, as things are heating up, I've never seen anything like it. I think that this, as I said, is a very volatile situation. The fact that the police feel that they are have this hands-off policy, and especially then against blacks, right? Because they obviously wouldn't have the same approach to white people or others, because it doesn't. It's not the same level of attention on those cases as it is when it's an African American, right?
Yeah, I mean, here's a Cleveland-specific example, since that's where the Republican convention is taking place. A while back, there was the case of Tamir Rice, who I think was this, like, this 13, 14-year-old, like, kid in quotes. So, like, well, number one, they always call these youths who get shot by the police kids, even though they're, like, 13, 14, 15, and, like, 100 years ago, if you were that old, you were usually, like, working and, you know, married and starting a family. But
some of them are, like, 200 pounds already, you know?
yeah. But anyway, this kid, Tamir Rice, was playing in public with a gun that looked a toy gun that looked like a real gun. Someone called the police because they understandably were a little suspicious. And when the police showed up, to Tamir Rice, he actually pointed the gun at them, and they shot him dead. And the left was suddenly like, oh, they shot some guy with they shot some kid with a toy gun. That's horrible, racist, you know, Black Lives Matter, blah, blah, blah. But here's the thing, you know, when you're police officers are trained to react to any possible threats to their safety or the safety of innocents. That's why when you're interacting with the police, the first thing you'd have to do is you have to convince them that you're not a threat. Once you convince them that they're not a threat, then you can, you know, have a peaceful negotiation with them or whatever. If they see you're a threat, they're going to act on that. And a couple months back, the city of Cleveland was actually forced to pay out a several million dollar settlement to Tamir Rice's mother based on the fact that this kid was so dumb, ignorant, that he thought that pointing a toy gun at police who are armed with real guns was a good thing. It was a smart thing to do.
Oh, God, you know, and it's a huge industry of this, too, by the way. Remember the Charleston shootings? What was it? The families were given, was it 23? I'm looking at it right now. What is it? 23 million? It was Obama fast track. 29 million, it says there, actually. Department of Justice. And then on top of it, the families actually went together now in a class, I think it's a class action lawsuit against the FBI because of they argued that they failed to do proper background checks. Ergo, they're seeking to make even more millions by suing the FBI because Roof managed to get a hold of a gun, you know.
Yeah, and this is Black Lives Matter and restraining the police is occurring at the same time that the Democrats left are making a renewed push for gun control, which represents how powerful they feel. I mean, back 8 years ago, we know that the left wants to take away guns; they want to gel the Second Amendment. Well, they had to sort of be discreet about it. But now we have Hillary openly talking about instituting gun control laws. We had that illegal sit-in that happened in the House of Representatives last week.
Yeah.
And we know for a fact, that if the Democrats obtain power, they are going to do everything they can to restrict our Second Amendment rights. Or in the case of the Supreme Court vacancy, Antonin Scalia died earlier this year. They're going to appoint Hillary will appoint a justice who will reinterpret the Second Amendment to allow massive gun grabbing. So we won't be able to defend ourselves. The police won't be able to protect us. We'll be living in a it will be complete anarchy, complete chaos.
You told me about this Summer of Chaos operation that was initially planned by Black Lives Matter. Maybe there was a connection to Loretta Lynch. Has this kind of unfolded the way they wanted? It seems to have been somewhat quiet so far. Correct me if I'm mistaken.
They've been somewhat quiet probably because they realize that they can't push too far too fast. Because certainly, I do think Trump understands these people, and the reason why he was, for example, back during the Super Tuesday when he was the primary races in major states like Illinois, Ohio, Missouri, with cities that have been ruined due to black criminality and the emptying out of manufacturing jobs. He was scheduling rallies in places like St. Louis, Chicago, Cleveland, and he had to have known on a certain level that there was going to be massive pushback. And with the California primary, he's scheduling rallies in places like San Jose, Orange County, places with large amounts of illegal aliens. Because on a certain level, he realizes, people are going to see the optics of illegal aliens, Mexicans, holding up signs to say, make America Mexico again, America was never great, burning the American flag, and openly attacking American citizens who for the crime of just showing up to a political rally. At a certain level, I think they realize that if they push too hard, too fast, they're going to deliver the White House to Trump, and they're going to enrage whites to the point where, they won't be able to, push back anymore. But at the same time, they're not going to surrender so easily. This is they do in fact they view Trump as a major threat. They view the alt-right as a major threat, and they're going to do anything. They're going to do whatever they can to tamp that down, including breaking the law if necessary.
Well, absolutely. I think it was yesterday I was looking at CNN a little bit of their coverage. I wanted to see what they were saying about the vindication of Hillary after this email scandal. And it was just, I mean, it's a debacle, the whole thing, obviously. The fact that they dropped this ball. But on the other hand, what they'd spend their time on CNN was basically to hyper-analyze the symbolism, almost like a conspiratorial esotericist of Trump's tweet, because of the fact that he had a red star that talked about in the image that was like about Hillary's corruption. There was like dollar bills in the background. ADL had their people on CNN. Alan Dershowitz were there. They were all like just attacking him over this fact that they. I mean, the way they held their rhetoric here was basically they think that Trump is like going to build gas chambers when he gets into power or something. It was hilarious to see this.
Yeah, you know, the guy who has a Jewish daughter and a Jewish son-in-law.
Right, but it doesn't matter. Right? That's what I said. It was like, well, we can't, you know, he clearly is like coddling to these white supremacists. And again, the connection to like David Duke and Andrew Anglin was brought up. And it's hilarious, you know.
By that standard, I guess, you know, Hillary is connected to Bill Ayers or Louis Farrakhan or whatever violent leftist on the that's something the left always does. You know, they constantly try to associate the right with, like, you know, what they perceive as the worst elements, the most extreme elements, but they never attack anyone to their left.
No.
Bill Ayers is still still holds a tenured position at the University of Chicago. They never denounce their own extremists. And, you know, the conspiratorial mindset where they're, you know, they're ignoring, trying to downplay the massive email scandal of Hillary, but they're trying to analyze the finer points of Trump using a six-sided star on a Twitter flyer, you know, it kind of reminds me of during the Russian Revolution when the revolutionaries broke down and entered the palace of the Tsar. They discovered that the Russian revolutionaries, I mean, the Russian aristocracy, were obsessed with tarot cards and astrology. You know, they were so delusional and so, you know, unwilling to accept the reality of their country collapsing around them. They were falling into this sort of conspiratorial thinking. And this is very common among the left, almost a pathology. I remember not too long ago I was getting savaged by leftists on Twitter for something a comment I'd made. And I made an innocuous tweet about how I like chess or something, and someone replied to me and was like, oh, the real reason you like chess is because white moves first, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's true. I've seen... we used to be into symbolism in this show. We were talking about, you know, we were savvy to many esoteric subjects. And you're right. It was partially due to the fact that there is a connection between an interest, a fetish, if you will, for some of these topics and many of these global elites and whatever. But I've seen in Britain, for example, they've been analyzing these kids shows about like trains and stuff like that. That is like really like a hidden kind of power narrative of whites dominating, you know, brown people and black people in these like kids TV shows. I've never seen like the level of paranoia, if you will, in terms of that everything around them is somehow a reflection of like this power dynamic. I mean, feminists do very much the same thing, right?
Yeah, well... Robert Ringer had a good quote in his book, Winning It with Intimidation. If you deny reality, it will automatically work against you. And the leftist mindset is about denying reality. It's about denying the differences between races. It's about denying the differences between the sexes. It's about, deluding yourself and thinking that a man can have his genitals chopped off and take hormone injections and become a woman. It's about denying the reality of leftist economics not working. It's about denying all these things. And they have to constantly keep on guard mentally to perform these doublethink exercises, or otherwise their whole worldview will come crumbling down. Which is why they're constantly on the hunt for racism or sexism. They're constantly performing these public displays of piety. You know, it's like the whole wow, I can't even every time they see something that goes against the leftist orthodoxy. It's all a massive attempt to just keep their own minds from collapsing in on themselves. When you acknowledge reality, like we do on the right, the alt-right, you don't have to live a life of lies. You know, it's a kind of a grotty cliche, but if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. You know, if you tell the truth, you don't have to, constantly, you know, play these mind games on yourself and other people in order to convince them that, you know, to avoid seeing the fact that the emperor is naked.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's why they're looking at things like microaggressions, because there aren't any systemic macroaggressions. Same thing with white privilege, right? There's like, well, it's actually very difficult to understand. And I love this idea, too, that it's only like it's only other people that can explain to white people what white privilege is. But if any time at all a white person talks in any terms about, you know, other people and other cultures, they're immediately attacked for not knowing what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's completely... In many ways, you know, you can learn a lot about the leftist mindset by studying personality disorders. I've spent a good portion of the past few years studying narcissism and codependency and borderline personality disorder, just because, well, I've encountered people in my life who are like that. And
what is borderline? I don't know. What is borderline personality disorder?
I'd say it's more common among women. This disorder where someone is obsessed with getting attention to the point where they will act out. Like, for example, you hear cases of, like, you know, women who will provoke their boyfriends into beating them. That's usually borderline personality disorder, because the easiest way to provoke someone is not to get them to love you or respect you. It's to piss them off, you know.
Right.
And you see a lot of these pathologies to a weaker extent among the left. I mean, we talked about this on the last time we talked on your program, Henrik, anonymous conservative's book, How to Deal with Narcissists. The narcissist is constantly about denying reality, constructing a false one, and whenever someone rudely interrupts that reality, they have narcissistic rage. They completely lose their minds. In his book, he actually named as an example something I did a few years back. I wrote an article for my blog, a sort of satirical article called "The Case Against Female Self-Esteem," and there was one person who reacted to it by saying, writing on our Tumblr log, "Well, I can't read it. I'm having rage blackouts. I can't think. I'm dizzy." It's like, you know, that's someone who's having a narcissistic blackout. Something about my article triggered her to the point that, you know, that's where they talk about trigger warnings. You know, they're sort of signaling to each other that, you know, don't go here, otherwise you're going to have a mental breakdown.
Yeah, disengage. Don't even look at it. And that's where the major problem arises, that these sides that we're now seeing arising in such a strong way in American politics, which is leading to this kind of violence, is that they have an inability to literally even communicate with each other. People, I mean, that's one of the dangers, I have to say, with the type of environment that the internet has created. There's all these little special interest groups and subgroups and identity politics, and they're only in this echo chamber all the time, and basically only are, subjected to people who only think like them all the time, so that when they engage in someone who doesn't share all those beliefs and opinions, they literally shut down and don't know how to deal with it or how to argue even.
Yeah, it's a product of the internet. It's also a product of a plain old social retardation. You know, you've got these whole generation of kids. You know, helicopter parenting. Don't talk to strangers. You know, kids don't play outside anymore. Their parents don't let them have fun outside anymore. They don't interact with each other that much. So what you end up is we have a generation of kids who've been raised on the internet, who've been raised on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, who have no clue how to interact with other people, and they have no clue how to interact with people who aren't like them. So when they encounter something that's outside of their worldview, they go absolutely nuts. That's why that's why social justice has really reached a sort of a peak with the younger generation. That's why we've got, like, you know, trigger warnings, you know, on college, syllabi, and why we've got, like, for example, what happened a couple months back when Breitbart's Milo Yiannopoulos tried to give a speech at DePaul University. A bunch of students come and shut it down because, you know, the mere fact that he's somewhere on campus speaking ideas that they don't agree with means that he's, you know, creating an unsafe environment, and they have to do something about that. They got to shut it down. Oy vey, shut it down.
Yep. Because, it's pretty remarkable because, I mean, with all their... I mean, this is a known kind of contradiction that they bring to the table, obviously, but this aspect that they think that they're so tolerant and they're so inclusive and they're so, you know, but then they claim, well, I'm only intolerant towards those who are intolerant. It was like, well, that's a catch-22. Look at how intolerant many of these lefties are towards, you know, white people and towards us as a group, and this, I mean, blatant hatred that they exhibit towards people. And, you know, they expect to be treated well in return. It's retarded.
Yeah, Steve Saylor called this, on a political level, the coalition of the fringes. The Democratic Party, and to a lesser extent leftist parties in Western Western countries in general, are a coalition of those who oppose normality. It's gays, it's blacks, it's Hispanics, it's everyone who is against single mothers, everyone who is against families, everyone who is against whites, everyone who is against masculinity and femininity, and their tolerance is for everything that is not normal. Another fine example of how these people are intolerant. Again, some of you may have already seen this video, but when I was filming the Milo Yiannopoulos speech and the little protest that happens afterwards, there was a protester next to me, and I caught this on video. I jokingly said to her that she needed to lose some weight, and her response was she starts screaming at me. He's like, fuck you, fucking racist. Then she tried to attack me, steal my phone out of my hand. Yeah. It's like these people exist in a and after discovering who she was, she's a typical sort of she's from the suburbs, or her parents are paying for everything. The only job in quotes she's ever had is interning for some local comedy troupe. She's involved with every left wing socialist, Black Lives Matter, anti-capitalist protest you can think of. Just these people's lives are so sad that I almost feel bad about making fun of them.
Yeah,
the key word there being almost.
Of course. No, but I mean, there's something to be said for they signal socially all the time. They shame people they don't agree, but somehow they are expected to be insulated from attacks when it's directed towards them on the same level. I mean, there's something to be said about fat shaming. The fact that, society, from a point of view of genetic fitness, used to shame those people that obviously were the weaker links in society. And they said, you better shape up and be part of the group here. Otherwise, you'll become a liability for all of us, right? There's a genetic and a survival mechanism behind these kinds of, behaviors and things that are supposed to spur us or anybody who is it's concerning to become better, to improve who they are, to lose some weights, to train a little bit and stuff like that. But this is not allowed now. It's become a culture of the lowest common denominator, and a culture that puts disease and sickness and mental problems on a pedestal, and that it's somehow those are the aspects that are better than this kind of normality, right?
A lot of people. So there are some people who responded to that video when it viral, saying like, "Well, you're not exactly in shape yourself, Mr. Ford." It's like, yeah, I know I'm overweight, but here's the thing: if someone calls me fat on the street, I'm not going to like try and attack them. I acknowledge the fact that I have a problem and I've been working on it. These people, it's one thing if you're overweight. It's one thing if you have these issues. It's quite another to demand acceptance for them.
Of course.
It was like just the other day, I saw someone had linked to my blog some Canadian writer writing for some I think The Independent or something, and she's whining about dear fat phobic people. We're just trying to live our lives without discrimination. It's like don't you have anything? If you spent a tenth of the energy on fixing your problems, losing weight or whatever, that you spend on trying to get everyone to justify your to accept you, you wouldn't have your problems anymore.
Right. Exactly. Well, it says they're not used to doing that hard work. Right. It's the world that has to change, not me. Right. It's the rest of
yes.
The rest of reality has to be transformed in order to fit into my kind of narrow perception of what is okay and what isn't. It's retarded.
And that in and of itself is actually a hallmark of the narcissistic mindset. Narcissists try to reshape reality to create a personality for themselves. And like I said, they rage or they black out or they have resets whenever that reality is punctured.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, listen, let's go back a bit to the Democratic Convention. You were telling me that you also perceive, we can talk about the Republican later, obviously there will be probably huge demonstrations outside. That's where you're going to be. That's where we're going to be to cover this, and we want to try to get more people involved that are both in Cleveland for the Republican National Convention and also in Philadelphia for the Democratic National Convention. But you said that you think the Democratic one might turn out very violent too. It maybe even on the inside, there's a huge schism between the Bernie fans and Hillary right now. Tell us more about that.
Well, yes, exactly. The thing is, some people haven't actually noticed this, but there's been a huge civil war brewing among the left for the past year. The left is really sort of divided into two camps, revolving around Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, in response to how they've run their campaigns. On the one side, you have what I'd like to call the sort of authentic socialist types, such as Sean McElwee or Matt Brunig or Glenn Greenwald, types like them, who are still holding to the economic program of the left. They're against corporate power. They're against Wall Street power. They support Sanders because they view him as a authentically, whatever else you can say about Sanders, you know, he's at least principled in the fact that, you know, he wants to socialize the economy, you know, and he's pro-union. And on the other hand, you have the identity politics types who are backing Clinton. These are the people who are obsessed with microaggressions. These are the people who are obsessed with, you know, the progressive stack and check your privilege types. They're backing Clinton, despite the fact that Clinton is a very she's in the pocket of Wall Street. She's in the pocket of major corporations. There was I don't have to go through all the massive evidence on that front.
She's so corrupt, Matt. I mean, it's unbelievable. I've said it a few times, but if people want to find out more, take a look at the Clinton Chronicles on YouTube. It's an older thing, so it doesn't detail the more recent stuff. But even the murders that the Clintons are behind, especially when they were out of Arkansas, Little Rock, you know, of the drug running into these into the airport that they were tied to, and the there was restaurant owners that received kickbacks and money, and all, and many of these people were actually connected to the Democratic National Convention as well. It's insane.
Yes. Yes, and the conflict between the groups, two groups, is that the Sanders camp views the Clinton camp as being, you know, they're selling out the principles of the left in favor of, you know, due to identity politics, you know, they're siding with corporations and everything like that. Whereas the Clinton camp views, you know, the Sanders people as like entitled white men. That's where you get the term Bernie bro from. There was, and we've still seen a large number of dust ups to that effect. This particular incident I'm talking about actually happened when we were all at the American Renaissance Conference, but there was a Matt Brunig, who is a policy analyst for Demos, a far-left think tank, was fired from his job because he criticized a Hillary supporter on Twitter who also happened to be a woman and Indian. He criticized her for supporting welfare reform in the 90s, and this devolved into a huge shit fight between the Clinton camp and the Sanders camp. And what we're seeing is, the Sanders people, this rift is not going to be healed. Sanders, for better or for worse, represents a clean break between these two sectors of the left. You know, people were sort of expecting that the two camps would reconcile the same way Obama and Clinton did in 2008. But the thing is, Obama and Clinton really weren't that different. You know, they were both corporate Democrats taking Wall Street money. Sanders, to his credit, has remained fiercely independent, notwithstanding his personal spinelessness on certain issues, and his. The people he's activated are not going to go away. So we're going to see that's why he's fighting to all the way to convention, and his people are going to there will be violence in the streets of Philadelphia. I mean, going back to the Democratic convention in Chicago in 1968, that was super violence. That was left on left violence. It was Chicago is a city that has been controlled by the Democrats for about a century, and the city administration, the police, were fighting activists who are further to the left than they are. We're going to see, and also I have sources within the Republican Party that tell me that Clinton is planning on, when she gets the nomination, purging anyone who was disloyal to her, anyone who supports Sanders, from the party. Hillary Clinton is pretty much openly a very vindictive individual. She views them as having stabbed her in the back. She's been stabbed in the back twice now. First, when she ran in 2008, and this time she has the party machinery on her side. We're going to see a lot of people who are people in the Democrats, the left, who are going to be cast out into the wilderness. And again, these are this is somewhat unconfirmed, but again, my sources also tell me that Hillary is going to try and actually do an outreach campaign to moderate Republicans in August. Mm-hmm. There are rumors that she may actually be naming prominent neocons to her cabinet. It's already been confirmed that she's been reaching out to donors from the Bush family, donors, you know, George W. Bush, since they are not participating in the election or endorsing Trump. She is trying to she's trying to hoover up all the corporate monies, man, and this is going to further inflame the Sanders left, who are either going to sectors of them are either going to vote for Trump or they're going to sit out the election. So we're going to see a massive schism in the left in the coming month.
Yeah, was it something with Richard Armitage? I mean, he's a huge neocon player.
Yes,
guy.
He's, He's one of the most likely candidates. Hillary has been she's been running a campaign that I have a report at Right On from the Iowa caucuses that sort of explains it. She's been running a campaign catering to the worst elements of identity politics. Her speeches are all about gay rights. They're about trans rights. Weirdly enough, she's taken up AIDS as a major cause. She's taken up fighting racism as a major cause. And this has also been sort of where Sanders almost entirely talks about economics. This has been borne out in the Democratic primary exit polls. Sanders and Clinton have more or less split the white vote 50-50. I think it might actually be edging in favor of Sanders. But the reason Clinton won is because she has almost monolithic support from blacks and Hispanics. If you go, for example, the New York presidential primary, which is Hillary Clinton's home state, in quotes, because she's a carpetbagger. But the two of them actually split the white vote 50-50, and Sanders actually won most of upstate New York, which is primarily white. But Clinton won the state in large part because of her monolithic support among blacks and Hispanics. There's a lot of bad blood between the camps developing on the racial question, because a lot of progressives have been there's this one alternate contributor named Adam Johnson who says that identity politics types who talk about racism and microaggressions are they're acting as they're covering for corporate power, because they're trying to silence by saying, you can't have an opinion. You're a white male. You're a cishet white male. You're privileged. Shut up. They're basically silencing a portion of the population from criticizing, corporate power, from criticizing Wall Street malfeasance, from criticizing this and that. So these two camps do not like each other at all. And we're going to see that explode in the coming months.
I'll be very interested to see what Trump is going to do to try to get that working class vote, because, yes, I understand the appeal of Sanders for many people. I mean, let's be frank about this. The system is corrupt. There's a lot of things going on that absolutely is proofs of what an inside, job many of these things are, and how much money the globalists and the elite have made from these, economic crashes and so forth, of undermining American workers, outsourcing their jobs, turning their back on them. But, if Sanders doesn't gain any further, if Hillary gets in, I wonder what Trump could do to try to attract that demographic and get them to vote for him. I hope they would, instead of voting for Hillary. What do you think?
Trump is already doing a pretty good job of bringing them in. His platform, he's against free trade, he's against NAFTA. That already automatically appeals to unions, particularly manufacturing unions, who've seen their jobs, their livelihood being shipped to Mexico or China wholesale. So he's got an advantage on that front, number one. And number two, Trump is not a traditional Republican. He doesn't use the term conservative. In a broad sense, he is obviously a conservative because he wants to conserve the American nation. But he is a nationalist at heart. He's about protecting the American worker, the American way of life, the middle class. And we've actually seen this borne out in polling. Now there are the mainstream media has been sort of trying to, drum the negative beat of, Trump's falling in the polls, Trump's falling in the national polls, due to his racism or blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, you have to remember, there really isn't so much one presidential election as there is 50 presidential elections for each of the 50 states, as well as for the Washington, D.C. And in swing states such as Pennsylvania and Michigan that have large numbers of unionized workers, the race is either very narrow or Trump is actually slightly ahead, because these workers, the union types, have had it with the Democrats telling them, you need to vote for us because the Republicans are evil, they're going to outsource your jobs, and the Democrats go around and they outsource the jobs anyway. So there is precedent for this. Back in 1980, 1984, Ronald Reagan was carried to the White House in part because he had massive support from unionized workers. Same thing happened in 1968 after the Democratic Convention and the Hard Hat riots. Many ordinarily Democratic union workers actually backed Nixon because they they may have left of center views, they may have left of center economic views. At the same time, these people they have families, they have kids. They love their country, and they're not going to, and particularly with, Hillary and her supporters just, attacking white men for being white men, attacking whites. They don't. If you insult someone and constantly degrade them, eventually they're going to fight back. And this is, and we're going to see this. We're going to see this in a big way. Regardless of whether Trump wins or loses, he's going to. And I do believe he's going to win, absent massive voter fraud. We're going to see massive support from him from unions and other demographics that traditionally don't support Republicans.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. You know. I want to discuss this more in the second segment in terms of also what might happen at the Republican National Convention. I want to get your take on Brexit and what's happening over in Europe right now. There's many things going on and rising. But before we take a break, let's spend some time talking about your, you know, again, you encapsulating obviously your ambitions for the live thing that you're going to do, and also what you need help with and assistance. I know that you've reached out to people. You're trying to get help with some of the funding so that you can cover your costs while you're there. Tell us more about that, Matt, and what you're seeking to do here.
Well, as with all of my previous coverage of you know, the Iowa caucuses and other campaigns, I'm raising funds because this is a very expensive endeavor. As anyone you know, Henrik, you can attest to this. You know, this independent journalism, you know, this work is not cheap,
and it's
there's
no.
a massive ex- massive ma- there are not massive expenses, but there are considerable expenses involved. Right now, I have been raising money for the past month. I have a target goal of about $2,500. I'm roughly about halfway there. This is to cover the car rental because, I obviously need to get around to get to Cleveland and Philly and get around the city. This will cover, you know, food. This will cover, you know, accommodation. This will cover equipment purchases. I need to really get up to speed. I mean, I could do it now, but there are certain such as a better mic or better equipment that I could use to, you know, cover the election. And there's also, you know, the rainy day fund in case things go wrong, you know, things get violent, you know, plans change, etc. And I have a proven track record of, you know, anyone who's been following my blog, following my YouTube channel, following my coverage at Right On or Return of Kings knows that I've got the goods. And if you've enjoyed my work, or if you want to help make this possible, help me cover the conventions for Red Ice as well as, you know, for Right On, etc., I really do encourage you to head on over to my website, mattforney.com, and donate. No amount is too small. Every dollar counts. This is not, you know, I can make these things happen with a relatively small amount of money, you know. This is a And with your assistance, I'm hoping to bring live video coverage to you, obviously, and bring you the unvarnished coverage that we need to sort of fight back against the mainstream media and get the story ourselves. So I recommend going to my website is mattforney.com. If you want to learn more about what I'm planning to do for the conventions, I recommend you go to mattforney.com/conventions. All the information is there. You can donate via, you know, PayPal, everything else. I really do appreciate your, and you can also see examples of my previous work on the Iowa caucuses and whatnot there. So I really do appreciate your support.
That's right. We'll be patching into Matt each day during, you know, the convention days, basically, try to get a rundown. And that's also why we wanted to see if we can get some other people to help out as well, additional cameramen, if you will. And if there's anyone out there listening who want to take part of this and not only, you know, meet Matt, maybe some of the other guys, if you can hook up as well. But even if you're in another location and just be an additional source that we can patch into, that would be awesome. That'd be great. We, you know, we do need, as you say, Matt, to build an independent media. That's what we've been talking about now. We did that ever since we did our kind of premiere live show a couple of months back now, and talking about this very aspect of us having correspondents and reporters that go out on site. You know, some of you that do, you don't have to, show your face. You don't have to be visible. You can literally just act as a cameraman and patch into things, specifically if they happen and if something kind of occurs, an event or something more dramatic that needs to be covered in some way. So we can, get the spin-free version of that and basically have a media that can talk about these things and analyze these things from our perspective. We don't have that voice, if you will. We don't have that representation. There's million-dollar endeavors that literally are working against our interests every day. So, you know, do help Matt out. That will also help us out at the end of the day, make sure that we can build a structure around an independent media. That's definitely what we need.
Yeah, we need to collaborate a lot more because when we come together, we can do much greater things than we can on our own. Well, we have a ton of guys, you know, in this part of the internet who have the experience, who have different skills, and we can accomplish so much more working together than we can not. So if you're in Cleveland or Philadelphia and you want to help participate in the live coverage, get in contact with me, get in contact with Henrik. We need all the support we can get. So you know how to get a hold of both of us.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, we'll have a link up, obviously, to the fundraiser that Matt has ongoing. Please do help out if you can, if you're able to do so. As Matt said, even smaller contributions are very much welcomed. And again, it's the classic old thing that people say every time. But if everyone listened, just donate a couple of bucks. So I bet you Matt would be there in just a few hours, basically. So. Definitely. Do that. But okay, very good. We're looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun to cover that. And we're going to try to kind of patch together, some kind of schedule, if you will, and have a couple of different people that we can patch into throughout the events and see. And again, it's as all live things are, it will have to be kind of on the fly and it will have to be adaptable to the circumstances, depending on what's happening and where the action takes place and whatnot. But, nothing else. It'll be a lot of fun. All right, well, folks, stay with us. We're going to continue here with Matt in the second segment, so much more to come. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more. I wish I would have met you. Well, join us for the second segment with Matt Forney at redicemembers.com. A membership is only €6 per month. Subscriptions go from 3 months up to 2 years. Support independent alternative media and help us cover more, reach out more, and proceed with our ad-free, commercial-free broadcasts, live shows, and video productions. We have much more to discuss with Matt, so stay tuned as hour two is up next here. But before we do that, let me quickly just tell you about our upcoming guests. We have a 314 with Lana on Wednesday with State of Nation. Then on Friday, we have Jay Dyer on global terrorism and what happened in Dallas and a whole lot more. We have several shows queued up after that with Roger Devlin, James Bacot, John Lash, Gurmar Rudolph, and also Eric Hunt on Elie Wiesel. Stick around, ladies and gentlemen. More coming now in the second hour. RedIceMembers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you on the other side.